I think most people think that these large language models, ChatGPT, just fell out of the sky one day. We've been working on that for 70 or 80 years, right? And I started in the AI space inventing the first virtual assistant. Her name was Mary, and eventually all of that got licensed for Siri and Cortana and Alexa and all of the other virtual assistants. You can look at the advent of large language models and say, what kind of company can I create leveraging that technology? How can I use it to come up with something that really solves someone's pain and has enough of a moat around it where you aren't going to have 100 other companies do it.
I'm excited for that idea that, like, all right, in normal life, I work hard or whatever, but maybe 80% effective if I'm really good at things. Having that extra 5-10% from, like you said, just like that may not be the best response for you may need a little bit deeper. That's exciting. And I just wonder, what are we going to be selling? What are we going to be promoting based upon it when AI can handle so much?
Well, let's look at productivity this way, right? If you've got a startup, you're an entrepreneur, maybe it's you and a few people, whatever it is at the beginning. If you would not take a pencil and a ledger book and start to keep track of your finances at the business. And you don't do that because, one, we have Excel, or two, we have QuickBooks or the like, right? So we have tools now that actually in the task of math and finance, and we'll use finance in particular, probably makes you and me 10 to 100 times more productive than we would be with a pencil and more accurate. Some number like that. Huge. Just in that one task. That's a task that could have taken days and now takes a half an hour, whatever it is, right? So 10 to 100 times more productive. That is what large language models are actually doing for our language tasks. They're making us, for that task, 10 to 100 times more productive than we would have been. And we may or may not have better outcomes, but we certainly used our time better. So if we've now automated math and we've automated now language, including decision-making, right? You can ask it, what decision would you make, blah, blah, blah. So we've now automated the two big things that any entrepreneur has to do. They got to do math associated things, and there's lots of those. And you have to do language associated things, and there's lots of those, right? Now, there may be some other things. Obviously, there's other things you do during the day. You have to, I don't know, take this to the bank, or you have to take the dry cleaning to here, or you have to, you know, fire up the chemical mixer, whatever it is, right? That AI is not going to do.
But, yes.
But all of those other desk
chop
tasks,
the wood.
Yeah, all these other desk tasks are getting automated in a way that helps you. You're still in charge. You know, you're the master of Excel. It didn't go off and run some math without you, just like you're the master of the large language model. Same thing. You are the master of it. You own it. You tell it what you want, you tell it what to do, and you take back, and you either take it or leave it or regenerate it or fix it or whatever. You're still the master. And I think when people realize that, they go, oh, this is just an incredible tool set that finally automates the other half of my time at my desk, including emails. Yeah. I can apply this to emails. And of course, in Outlook, we've already now got starting to be built in everybody's Copilot for Outlook, Copilot for writing presentations. It's phenomenal. The presentations look better than I could do. And I can also go out to Stable Diffusion or DALL-E 3 or whatever and generate amazing images and boom, put them right there. There was an image I needed for one of the startups I'm working with in the home theater space, sort of. And I just needed this exact picture of these people watching this and these are the speakers and this is what it looks like, the size of the screen. I just described that all. I could not find a photo anywhere, even, you know, not that I would borrow a photo, but even stock
clip art.
Nobody had taken one from that angle. I had one in 10 seconds. There it was. Boom. Put it right in the presentation. It looked like I shot the photo, except they didn't shoot the photo. This is, like I said, amazing time to be alive and an amazing time to be an entrepreneur. If you think of all the presentation you have to write, do, make look great, I would do pitch decks, send them to an artist, and we'd go back and forth for 3 weeks, even though the pitch deck's going to change all the time, right? Now, I write the pitch deck, and then I go, I need art for this, 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 and this. Boom, 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 boom. Done. I'm sorry about the artist, but I didn't need to do it. And by the way, give me a better layout for this. Okay, here. Boom.
Yeah.
Wow. This is amazing, right? So this changes everything you do as an entrepreneur, including the testing of markets. You know, you can ask ChatGPT, what do you think of this idea? You know, I want to make fireplace stones. I'm looking at the fireplace behind you. If that's a fireplace, I don't know. That look the following way, but go together automatically, and it'll have some great recommendations on and even on how to solve problems and problems with employees. You know, it's amazing.
It's funny you say that because I have been experimenting with some of those like avatar discovery avatar. You're like, okay, here, ask questions. And in the past, I've invested and been involved with various user testing platforms. And I did something and sent it to a friend who's an ex-CEO of one of them, but he sold. And he was like, oh, this is really good. Who did you use? And I was like, yeah, this was earlier. Now he's even much more of it. But I was like, ChatGPT. He was like, uh-oh. We had to go find like 10,000 people to go answer these questions.
Right. Exactly. It is an amazing time. And so that's why I think as an entrepreneur, you know, the only thing we don't have is time, because time is money and we're burning up money as we take time, and your whole day goes by and you put 12 hours in, you go, I only got done with half the tasks. And okay, start using these accessible models that are now in English, and you might find 5 hours of your day comes back to you.
That leads to a very good question I would like to ask you. Because of your involvement, the time you've been in the space and what you're doing now, you really are very much involved in a focus use of AI. I think a lot of entrepreneurs, we use the tools. Yeah, we have a very haphazard, especially when we're in that second inflection point into seven figures. We stopped rubbing sticks together as fast as possible, and now we're trying to figure out how to create structure and do this in a way we can actually sleep.
Scale.
That's my goal usually. It's, can I actually get to where I'm sleeping normally? But we throw tools at problems as we see them. We see whatever people are finding cool, you know, hear from podcast shows, whatever, where the tools are. How can we actually develop a practice around understanding? Because it changes so quickly. It's not about which tool is the best, but just being adaptable to AI. How can entrepreneurs start building an AI understanding or an AI practice?
Yeah, so I think there's two things, right? One, what are the best practices to use it within my company, me and my people? And where do we want to use it? And where do we need to be cautious? And where can't we use public models where we have to have a private model or private access so that we're not giving certain things away? So I think you do have to put those best practices in, and best, we'll say, models, for lack of a better word, because it isn't about ChatGPT versus Bard. It's really about often third party, other startups, right? Who have really done great embeddings or great unique uses of those models so that it's much more valuable and usable to you, right? And that's and that's what you want to do. And so I just think, look, you have to take the time to find what works for you, what really adds value, what really adds productivity, and then launch that out throughout the rest of your team, however big that team is, and then encourage them to use it. Like, no coder should not be using either Codex or Copilot. It would be ridiculous. Although most coders aren't. But the ones that are 55% more productive than the ones that aren't. So please use it. It doesn't work all the time, but you're going to double your productivity. That's pretty amazing, right? 55% more productive. And that's across like a million users. So I think that's fabulous. And then the other side of that is, are there places I can leverage this kind of technology to build out a product so that the technology is embedded in my product, right? You're not going to go build a $7 billion foundational model that ChatGPT did, that OpenAI did, but you can leverage OpenAI and ChatGPT or other models or Llama 2, whatever, in ways that are highly unique that you could build a real moat around. And it's certainly, you know, at AppVance, you mentioned AppVance, we have invented methods since the first product came out in 2018 to leverage AI and machine learning to find bugs in enterprise software. Where we are today is that we'll find 10 times more bugs than your entire QA team. I know what this is going to bring up. It brings up the question that we're not really going to talk about today probably is, oh, how about my job? Look, there are certain jobs that are going to certainly be impacted by AI. Most of those are not in the United States today. And that's simply because, not because we're being picky about who gets laid off or who's, because swaths of of certain kinds of jobs were sent offshore over the last 20 years. And those happened to be the things that were the most price sensitive. We could not afford to pay $20 an hour. We wanted to pay $1 an hour. So we went offshore. We paid $1 an hour. Tier one customer support. That's an example.
Yeah.
Certainly software QA. And there are many, many others, right? Those will be the first. They are already the first jobs that are under threat from AI. Again, not because they happen to be offshore, but because of the very nature of why we sent them offshore. We sent them offshore because they were relatively easy to train people and they were relatively repetitive tasks. And if I can train a repetitive task, then I can do those offshore and I don't feel bad about it. It's a great use of human resources and these are great people taking those jobs. But I don't need to do them onshore. I don't need those people, right? So those are the first jobs that are under threat. And they're under significant threat over the next 1, 2, 3 years, not 20. It's like most tier one customer support will be a chatbot or will be a virtual assistant, period, full stop. Frankly, the machine does it better. It's more accurate. It gives more accurate results more often. And you can update basically what it says on a dime as we learn more, right? As we change our FAQs or whatever. So look, again, exciting time. If you're an entrepreneur and you had tier one customer support, whether it was here or there or whatever, really, you can have a chatbot do that a week from now. It's very easy. Mm-hmm. I don't think we'll get into embeddings and how that's done, but there are companies that do it for you. And now, frankly, OpenAI has basically sort of launched the ability to do it right on their platform. And you don't need necessarily Pinecone and all these specialized databases, right? So it's really fascinating. It's just a fascinating time. And if you can cut your tier one customer support costs from $1 million a year to $20,000 a year to pay for the AI or $30,000, that's incredible. That's more money back to you to drive the cost of your product down to be more competitive.